Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Professor Eric Bergloff, who is chief economist at the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development. We met at the EBRD in early October 2008, where Eric had just chaired a public discussion meeting on recent increases in food prices, causes, consequences, and possible remedies. In his opening remarks, Eric noted that the huge price rises mean that agriculture is back at the heart of the world economy. And yet the field of agricultural economics is now a backwater. This despite its significance in 20th century economics. Think giants like Ted Schultz and Gail Johnson at Chicago, and even John Kenneth Galbraith at Harvard, who began his career as an agricultural economist.
Yes, it is amazing how much sort of destruction of human capital we have seen, how many people have left the field, how international institutions have dismantled their departments for rural and agricultural development, how bilateral agencies have done so. You look at academic departments, these agricultural institutes have been really, there are very few around. And now when this is coming back to hit us, the knowledge, the understanding is not there.
So what tools have we got to think about this issue? How do we go about thinking about it? Obviously, we've got supply and demand, but where do we go from there?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that really stands out from this is how interlinked different markets are, and how they are linked also to, so the commodity markets are very much linked to financial markets, are linked to macroeconomic policies. They are linked to trade policies. You know, understanding these interlinkages is absolutely critical. I think we have the basic tools. It's just that no one has really applied them to these issues and the issues of food. And the fact that you had a secular decline in food prices over a long period of time sort of meant that no one really focused on this. Urbanization has been probably the most important trend in development, and it was viewed as part of development, and no one sort of really focused on the sort of agriculture, rural areas, their challenges, and that's unfortunately where we are today.
Can we talk about the challenges particularly facing the EBRD region? I mean, one of the most famous episodes of communist history was, of course, Stalin's collectivization of agriculture, and that kind of thing must have played out into some big issues when transition happened, and now the influence on the issue around price rises.
Absolutely, and we are still living with the legacy of those programs, and it's striking how in our region, so the post-Soviet space, that three of the largest potential suppliers, so we have Kazakhstan, Ukraine, and Russia in particular, these countries have enormous capacity for increasing both the cultivated land and efficiency improvements. And many these very low efficiency agriculture that was in Soviet times, was that situation was almost made worse by the disintegration of these farms and the lack of protection of property rights for land. And so these are very real challenges. But it's also, when you look at the global challenge, you know, if we could get a strong supply response in these countries, it could make a real difference. And it has actually been remarkable how both sort of local farmers have responded, but also how financial systems, banks have responded by providing credit. And so we have seen certainly this. But the problem is that there are so many links in the agricultural chain. So you had a bumper harvest in Ukraine, but suddenly you didn't have warehouses to store the harvest, so you got lost. So you have to build on many different parts. So it's not enough just to do the primary agriculture.
And part of, I mean, the central issue really of transition has been getting the state out of involvement in the economy. But now I guess we're talking about much more government in intervention to try and deal with some of these problems, well, both national governments and international organisations.
Well, I mean, that's right. I mean, so you have seen actually a lot of government responses to this because it became a, you know, politically very sensitive issue. Unfortunately, many of these responses have been the kind of things that we probably don't want to see, things like price caps, like export bans, and so on. I mean, it's understandable given, you know, that's the way politics works in these countries, very strong influence of the people living in the cities, and these are, after all, industrialized countries. So things that could have provided, you know, incentives for farmers to go into more to more efficient technologies or cultivating more of their land, you know, that's not happening because the government is putting lids on prices and on an export. I think, you know, what was striking, you know, so we tried to bring together the farmers and the producers in the agribusiness sector with policymakers, and it seemed like they didn't talk to each other. I mean, there was very little conversation, and you know, in striking sort of lack of understanding from policymakers of the real issues in the agricultural sector and how one should respond, and what, you know, when there seem to be really win-win situations for a country like Ukraine, for example, a country like Kazakhstan and like Russia, policymakers were very slow in understanding the needs. But what was the most striking thing was just that there had been so little conversation between the players on the private side and on the public side.
Well, what's the role of international institutions? I mean, like the EBRD, but other big players like the World Trade Organization and the World Bank, IMF?
Well, I think one should say that I think all of us are in the end, you know, in the margin of things, but I think there are very concrete things that one can do. And again, just creating these fora for bringing together private sector and government is an invaluable one. I think we can contribute to financing of, you know, specific investments in various parts of the value chain, and trying to see, you know, where do we have the most spillovers into other parts of the economy. But there's, after all, these resources have to come from domestically. But we can help provide maybe financing also to the banks promoting microfinance for farmers and so on. But really, these challenges are ultimately with the domestic government. The amount of resources that are needed to develop primary agriculture are enormous, and one shouldn't give the illusions that this can be solved by international institutions. What we can do, we can try to promote a policy dialogue that really makes policymakers aware of the need to get clearer protection of property rights, more stronger incentives to really invest in more efficient technologies.
Final question, Eric. How do you see the food crisis connecting to the financial crisis? In a way, the food crisis has blown in some way from the east, from the demand in India and China, and the subprime crisis has blown in from the west, from the United States. How do you see the two interacting?
Well, I think that is definitely an interaction. On the one hand, we see that the financial crisis has a sort of dampening impact on commodities and also on agricultural commodities. But what's much more worrying, or what's worrying to me, is that getting resources now for investments in transferring technology and investments in cultivating more land, investments in adaptation of technologies, new technologies, is going to be very difficult in the current financial environment. You know, much more severe fiscal constraints on governments in trying to promote agricultural development.
Eric Bergdorf, thank you very much.
Thank you.